Adobe Airstream, the online art magazine. This is Adobe Airstream Radio. Art, film, music, design.
David Richard Gallery, Santa Fe's premier space for painting and sculpture in the rail yard, telling the rich stories of abstract art as it emerged from New York and California, from the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s to today. From color field to op to light and space, the evolution of the contemporary art world, keeping the story going. David Richard Gallery is at 544 South Guadalupe Street in Santa Fe. Or see us on the web at davidrichardgallery.com.
I'm Ellen Berkovich. I See a 2012 Albuquerque Machine Wilderness is the name of an international symposium on electronic art. It's the keystone event of an organization that formed in the Netherlands about 1990 to spearhead interactions between electronic artists and technologists. ICEA 2012 Albuquerque has been 3 years in the planning and takes over the city from September 19 to 24. These days, as machines and technology get ever more advanced, it can seem that they don't always aid, but rather sometimes interfere with the subtlety and give and take of human relationships. Here to talk about ICEA and the language of remedy that its subtitle, Machine Wilderness, confers on the program of workshops, lectures, concerts, performances, exhibits, and more is ICEA 2012's artistic director, Andrea Poli. Poli is Mesa del Sol endowed chair of digital media and director of the social media workgroup at the University of New Mexico. Andrea, thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot, Ellen. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us about bringing ICEA to Albuquerque and how that came about and your role in it, please.
Well, I moved to Albuquerque from New York about 3.5 years ago, and I've been a part of ICEA as an exhibiting artist and a presenter probably for about 15 years. And I really enjoy the community, and I enjoy the fact that it's a symposium that happens in a different place around the world every year. And I went to fantastic symposiums in Singapore and Istanbul, and I thought coming here to Albuquerque, I thought, what a great place where a lot of really interesting juxtapositions are happening with regard to technology, art, and nature, and what if we thought about a theme along those lines and try to bring the world here. And the ICEA board agreed.
So as Machine Wilderness is described in the program, it tells us that artists and technologists are going to be presenting, and this part's a quote, ideas for a more humane interaction between technology and environment in which machines can take many forms to support and sustain life on Earth. So is it necessary in your view to take this approach to help soften how people think of electronic art? And is electronic art really in the business of remedy?
No, in fact, I don't think that this approach is designed to soften people's attitudes about electronic art and their technology that they live with. In fact, I think this is an incredibly critical stance that we're taking, and a very strong stance about the use of technology. I've been using and teaching technology for many, many years, and it's always very frustrating to think about how these devices are made and how they have changed our lives and how they're disposed of. And I think that there are many people working in the arts and in technology that are having the same feelings that I have about questioning what's happening. This symposium is really about raising those questions and offering potential solutions. And they don't have to be electronic bits and bytes solutions. They can be technology that's old technology. They can be simple technology. They can be different ways to grow food, different ways to create the built environment. So this is definitely not about softening people's stance towards electronic media or technology.
So I want to draw you out a bit on this whole idea of sub-themes to a conference that might sound to someone listening like they're related to policy in the political sense of policy. They're power, creative economies, transportation, wildlife, and finally the cosmos. So speak to the relationship between electronic arts and those, and whether or not electronic arts touch on public policy or are making efforts to affect policy through events such as this one?
Well, first to address the sub-themes, I see as quite a large symposium. There's about usually 500 to 1,000 participants, and it really helps to organize people's thinking to create these sub-themes, and that's something that's been done in other symposia. So what I was able to do is invite some really groundbreaking scholars and thinkers and artists to propose sub-themes. And so the sub-themes, you sort of read the descriptors of the sub-themes. The sub-themes are actually gridlocked. That's the power one. Econotopias, which is defined as creative economies. Dynamobilities, which is defined with the term transportation. And radical cosmologies, about the cosmos. And so different experts kind of came in with their perspective about these different sub-themes. And I really like the fact that you are bringing up the idea of policy in relation to these, because I think it's absolutely essential. And in fact, when you think about the sub-theme Econotopias, for example, where we're having people coming in, artists, scholars, technologists coming in who are really looking at our economies, our commerce, our exchange systems, and how they're structured and how they might be structured in the future, I think you're looking at something that is very political. Certainly electronic arts and the policies related to electronic arts from the beginning of the GPL and the open source movement to many of the things that are happening today, these policies really matter and they impact other kinds of information exchange. For example, sharing seeds or sharing biotechnology information has been directly informed by the open source movement in relationship to electronic technology. That's what comes to mind when you talk about policy in relation to electronic arts.
Well, I think what I'm getting at is what typically happens once a symposium which lasts 6 days ends, and how do the artists, the technologists, the participants, and really also especially maybe the audience keep talking in ways that keep the issues that something as extensive as this program, which I should say runs 26 pages, will be presenting?
Traditionally, the ICEA symposium brings a kind of global dialogue, and over the past 10 years or so, the symposia have been happening every year, and many of the same people are coming back. So what happens at the symposia is often there's this very rich international exchange that then turns into projects for the next symposia or for other festivals and events all over the world. So you'll see several things that are sort of continuations of previous symposia, for sure. I think one thing we would like to see happen locally is for this to help to re-energize or to further energize what's happening in the arts, technology, and science community in Albuquerque and in New Mexico as a whole. And it really has already started to do that. SART is a program that was formed in conjunction with ICEA for artists and scientists to collaborate. The goal of the SART program is to continue to support and encourage these kinds of collaborations well beyond the symposium. Another thing that we hope to energize is the idea of some kind of recurring festival event symposium that might be a biennial in the region. And this was something that the last time ICEA was in the United States was in San Jose, California in 2006, and the organizers in San Jose used ICEA to launch a recurring biennial that really had an incredible impact on the art and the community of San Jose.
Just to paint a bit of a visual picture, as the artistic director, I see that there are going to be lowrider cars playing symphonies this weekend. There are going to be trash trucks from Austin that a filmmaker did a documentary about a choreography, a dance piece in which the trucks and their sanitation workers danced. How, paint a picture for us of what are some of the objects that people will encounter and keep encountering after September 24th that are connected to ICEA, if not time-based, with the end of the conference?
Well, when you think, you're mentioning sort of the vehicle work, and that was something that was really interesting and important to me, thinking about the impact of the automobile on this region. So there's a piece by a Brazilian group called Gambiologica, and they build vehicles and devices using discarded electronics, and they've actually come to Albuquerque a couple weeks in advance, and they're working with youth in the city to build a number of different vehicles. So that will be on display. There's also a wonderful piece I just went and visited in El Paso. It's a kind of crazy spaceship sort of a car that travels both on rails and on highways. And it's created by two Mexican artists living in Mexico City. And the car has traveled now from Mexico City. It's in El Paso currently, and it's on its way to Albuquerque. So those are some of the vehicle pieces that you'll see. But then there's also wild pieces like a moving border fence that kind of robotically travels around the lobby of the Albuquerque Museum. There's a giant recycled plastic floating island inspired by, of course, the island of trash in the middle of the ocean that undulates in interaction with audiences. There's just a whole range.
Let me ask you finally to reflect on what you see, and maybe this deals in your position at the University of New Mexico as well. In an ideal world, what would happen through something like ICEA to increase electronic arts and media literacy in a state like New Mexico or even nationally in the United States? Do those two things connect?
Well, I think it's really the central point there is about innovation. I was recently in a conversation with a number of experts, and we were talking about how the young people creating projects that are inspired by science or their science learning, inspired by art, using the tools of art, computerized tools and manual tools, and they're just creating things and not really putting it in a box of this is my art project or this is my science project. And I think that kind of integrated thinking is extremely important both for children of the grade school age as well as university and even in industry, really kind of getting outside of the box.
Andrea Poli, I should say that your work can be seen on your website at AndreaPoli, P-O-L-L-I.com. And for a full program of ICEA 2012 events, visit ICEA, I-S-E-A, 2012.org. Thank you so much, Andrea, for talking to me.
Sure, thank you.
Are my own. Seeds of knowing were planted.
When singer-songwriter Dana Falconberry assembled Gina Dvorak, Carla Manzur, Matthew Shepard, Christopher Cox, and Lindsay Verrill together to fully flesh out her songs, it was quite obvious that she'd be taking her already ethereal songwriting to heavenly levels. There are very few things in this world than a lusciously orchestrated Dana Falconberry song, and her band's first LP, Leelanau, due out on October 9th on Antenna Farm Records, is indisputable proof of that. Adobe Airstream Radio presents Birch Bark, the opening track from Leelanau, as evidence.
No one will know. child home, and how the rain did fall. Branches danced in the windows. I folded up my painful toes. Oh, and how the rain did fall. Deep in a drawer and bound in a box with string and glue and fastened blocks. Oh, and how the rain did fall.
Information on Dana Falconberry, check out www.danafalconberry.tumbir.com.
Hello, I love you, won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you, let me jump in your game. Hello.
In the 1950s and 60s, Venice Beach had low rents and boardwalk and sands. It had Jim Morrison writing lyrics on the beach. It had young men artists showing work at Ferris Gallery. They shared ideas and materials and starred in movements named for their work: Finnish Fetish, Light and Space, Hard Edge, West Coast Pop. A groundbreaking exhibition at David Richard Gallery in Santa Fe's Rail Yard features one of the original three guys from Venice, Billy Al Bengston, along with Doug Edge and sculptor Fred Eversley. All the zest Southern California has lent to contemporary art movements during the last 50 years started then and continues today. Three Guys from Venice Beach opens on September 28th at David Richard Gallery at 544 South Guadalupe in Santa Fe's Rail Yard District. Here to discuss the art moves of these three guys from Venice Beach is Peter Frank, an art critic and historian who's lived in L.A. for 25 years.
The exhibition brings together three guys who've been working within blocks of each other in Venice, California, since the late 1960s or early 70s at least. Billy Al told me that he has been in Venice since the 1950s. Fred told me that he set up his studio on what is now Abbot Kinney Boulevard in the late 60s. And Doug, I understand, has been in several studios since around 1970. All three have been working more or less within walking distance of one another. Although in Los Angeles, of course, we don't call that walking distance. A selection of three artists based in Venice to exhibit together obviously makes a certain amount of geographic sense, but it also makes a certain amount of stylistic sense, even though they're so stylistically diverse.
Billy Al Bengston's 16 paintings in the show date from the mid-1990s. His grouping is titled It Hit the Fan.
Billy Al Bengston exhibition is distinguished from the Fred Eversley and Doug Edge exhibitions, not only in style, but in the fact that it concentrates on a specific body of work. The Eversley and Edge selections span almost 40 years, and Fred's selection at least 20 or 30. Billy Al's selection concentrates on a little-known but very strong group of paintings that he produced in the early 90s in Venice. He had been going back and forth between Los Angeles and Hawaii. Billy Al produced these paintings at a time of great personal stress, tremendous personal changes, and the paintings were painted in response to these changes. Billy Al is not capable of being entirely dark, but he's never really been capable of entire lightness either. And this is the secret power in his work, that his works, even the most glittery, popish works, have a kind of edge to them, and even the darkest, quietest works have a certain lightness of being to them. This body of work, to my mind, illustrates this very forcefully, with all this mixture of smooth and rough texture, these contradictory patterns, these shifts in color from dark and muddy to deeply saturated, colorful and beautiful. These paintings are kind of a testament to the complexity of life and the difficulty of living, but not the difficulty of finding happiness, but the difficulty of finding balance.
Doug Edge is exhibiting cast resin paintings and sculptures titled Molded, Poured, and Cast. He walked by a tree every day that had thorny outgrowths that he cast and applied to the painting surfaces, along with his casts of his own fingers. The sculptures in the show capture four decades of Edge's large-scale work. He was infusing new resins from Southern California's aerospace industry with his wit and satire. Doug Edge, according to Peter Frank, has been an artistic adventurer, a guy from Venice Beach who keeps on seeking.
Doug has gone in and out of working with the light and space, with Finnish fetish, and with conceptualism. You see in Doug Edge's work an immense capacity for experimentation, both with different subjects, with different forms, and with different materials. And the emphasis here is on materials, and that typifies Doug as a Venice artist, not just a Los Angeles artist. He was going in and out of light and space, he was going in and out of Finnish fetish, he was going out in and out of conceptualism, pattern painting, performance, and in fact, to this day, Doug doesn't stand in one place too long. But in that diversity, Doug actually touches upon the painterly practices of Billy Al, and also upon the light and space working with new technologies and new materials that Fred displays. So Doug is the visual and conceptual bridge between Billy Al and Fred.
Fred Eversley's roots in Venice go back to its emergence as a place where new art made critical headlines and new materials made work that challenged viewers' perceptions. Eversley's exhibition, Light Lens, features 12 sculptures, mostly based on the physics of the parabola, work that uses the science of optics in the service of art.
Fred is actually in John Altoon's old studio in Abbot Kinney. And Altoon, of course, was at one time almost the dynamic nucleus, if not the Venice scene, at least the Ferris segment of it, which is now recognized as the most prominent and historically significant. Fred was close with Altoon, which is interesting because Altoon was a vigorous painter and draftsman, and Eversley, of course, is a sculptor working in a very, very different way than Altoon did, but they were friends. Fred Eversley said about his sculpture that he's trying to effectively equalize the internal and external form. Fred was trained and worked as an engineer and came to this work with the fabrication skills and also the mathematical skills of an engineer, and always saw this work not simply as beautiful objects, but as lessons in perception. Whether you want to approach this as three one-person shows or a three-person show, the connections between the work go beyond the mere convenience of these three artists being, in effect, neighbors. Clearly, to anybody who takes a good long look, there clearly is a connection in spirit and intellectual inquiry. You have a good sense of the way people think out here. They want to cover all the bases. They're all interested in one another's work. So what you get a sense of from this show is a sense of actual community, a community based on more than just shopping at the same supermarket, but shopping in the same human flow.
I love you, won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you, let me jump in your game.
Three Guys from Venice Beach can be seen at David Richard Gallery in the Rail Yard District, 544 South Guadalupe Street, Santa Fe, from September 28th through November 3rd, 2012, with an opening reception at the gallery on Friday, September 28th from 5 to 7 p.m. See David Richard Gallery on the web at www.davidrichardgallery.com.
You've been listening to Adobe Airstream Radio, the voice of Adobe Airstream online.
music for Adobe Airstream Radio, Freedom, featuring Snowflake, by Eshar, courtesy of ccmixter.org, under a Creative Commons license.
I awake to my freedom. Give it birth from within.
David Richard Gallery, Santa Fe's premier space for painting and sculpture in the Rail Yard, telling the rich stories of abstract art as it emerged from New York and California from the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s to today. From color field to op to light and space, the evolution of the contemporary art world, keeping the story going. David Richard Gallery is at 544 South Guadalupe Street in Santa Fe, or see us on the web at davidrichardgallery.com.